Blog Talk Radio.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find an Asian, see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. They ain't gonna be in there. But 51% of your prison will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Blacks won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourself up. I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economics. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control buildings and industry, and put that pulls in your money, and hold that money, and practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 or 13 times for a lead. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folks got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money. Major corporations, who got the money? That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control and you take your money on the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with the politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor then is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor and you control the court system and the police department. Then the fourth floor, then is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk own and control less than 35 thousandths of 1% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about 75 or 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. So you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad-mouthing you. And O'Reilly, they can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't even communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisons in the United States are black people. You know you only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they can get their hands on to incarcerate. That's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march, a demonstration. We're going to march. March, who cares? Marching, they never changed anything.
Now, learn this from Joel Osteen. That's my man. He be texting me. That's my man. God done put some people around me, show me some stuff. He was telling this story. He said this man that went to heaven, and he was walking with Peter down this aisleway, and was going down this corridor, had a lot of doors on it, and said all these doors had names on it. And he said, Peter, let me ask you something. What's all these doors, these names on? He said, don't worry about it. Just go ahead. So he kept walking. He messed around. He saw one of them doors and had his name on it. He said, whoa. He said, hey, Peter. This here ain't got my name on it. Something I need to know? He said, man, don't worry about that. You here now. Just go on in there and talk to him. See what he's here. He said, nah, I want to know what's in the door. He said, you sure you want to see what's in the door? He said, yeah. So he opened up the door. It was a warehouse. It had nothing but shelves on it. And then the shelves had nothing but packages. And all the packages had his name on them. And he said, what is all these boxes? He said, that's all of the blessings, all of the things God wanted to ship to you. But number one, you didn't ask him for it. Then number two, you didn't believe you would have it. Then you doubted him. And then you felt like you wasn't worthy. And so now all these boxes is up here. Now the man standing there wishing he had never even been in the room. And I started thinking. I got some dudes that work for me. And I said, I want you to do this graph for me. And that's what I'm finna show you now. See, what you happen is, when God sends your package, he only sends it to one street. That's Faith Street. You got to stay in faith. You can't move off of Faith Street. You can't get on Doubted Drive. You can't be over there and start doubting it because your package going to go right on by. You can't lose your faith and get on Not Meant to Be Way because your package is going to keep going right on by. Because the package just go to Faith Street. You can get your little feelings hurt. I ain't worthy. Guess what? Your package going to keep going right on by. You have not because you ask not. Then you sit up here and start feeling sorry for yourself. You go on pity way. Your package keep going right on by. If you stay right on Faith Street, don't ever come off because the blessing is coming. If you wait on it, here it comes. It may not come when you want it, but it's on time. But if you get up and you move off of Faith Street, your box gonna get sent back to sender. And now you're gonna have a warehouse with a bunch of boxes with your name on it that you didn't never get. And I don't know about you, but I want everything he got for me. If he got something for me, I need all of mine. Because I don't know about you, but God lay you out, man. God will give you stuff. Man, he done took me places. I ain't never thought I was going to go. I done seen parts of the world I never even thought I could go to. He done gave me stuff. He done put people in my life. God will do it for you, man. But you just got to stay, man. Use these principles of success. Understand, God is just that way. He'll lay you out. Because if he can lay me out, see, if he fix me and change me and get me over here trying to do better, I ain't perfect. I'm just trying to do better. I still say some stuff I ain't supposed to say. You understand? I ain't got it all together yet. I just got in the gate. I'm a new kind of Christian. But ain't no lock on my gate either. So if you see, once you check me, I'm probably going to check you back. But I'm getting better at that. I don't know how to love my enemies yet. I'm getting better at it, though. But it's a process. And the more times we can make people understand that it's a process, the more people can come in. And y'all people that have been good to me, that have been praying for me. I mean, man, my mama, if she could see me now, I just wish my mama could see me. Because she's been praying for this hill all her life. Watch my son. Well, he done watched me, mama. And I'm cool now. And my philosophy is very simple. I was who I was, but I am who I am. And I'm cool with both them people. Because who I was wasn't that bad a cap. I made some mistakes, but I've been changed a little bit. And it's still a process. And the more people that you invite into the process, the better this is. Because ain't nobody perfect no how. So I really appreciate y'all, man, hearing me and listening to me. I'm going to ask Kirk Franklin if he will.
My home is not for sale. And if my home isn't safe, nobody's home is safe.
What Jim Salit is talking about is the city of Lakewood, Ohio, taking his house, his home, through eminent domain to make way for a high-priced condo that will pay the city more in taxes than he and his wife Joanne do. And he says he's not going to take it lying down.
It's the close-knit, beautiful neighborhood. It's what America's all about. And I'm going to fight them tooth and nail. I've just begun to fight.
I'm Mike Wallace.
I'm Morley Safer.
I'm Ed Bradley.
I'm Steve Croft.
I'm Leslie Stahl. Those stories and Andy Rooney tonight on 60 Minutes.
Just about everyone knows that under a process called eminent domain, the government can and does seize private property for public use to build a road or a courthouse. But did you know the government can also seize your land for private use if they can prove that doing it will serve what is called the public good? Cities across the country have been using eminent domain to force people off their land so that private developers can build more expensive homes and offices, which will pay more in property taxes than the buildings they are replacing. Under eminent domain, the government buys your property, paying you what is determined to be fair market value. But now, people who don't want to sell their homes at any price just to see their land go to another private owner are fighting back.
The bottom line is this is morally wrong, what they're doing here. This is our home, and we're going to stay here, and I'm going to fight them tooth and nail. I've just begun to fight.
Jim and Joanne Salit are refusing to sell the home they've lived in for 38 years in a quiet neighborhood of single-family houses in Lakewood, Ohio, just outside Cleveland. The city of Lakewood is trying to use eminent domain to force the Salits out to make way for more expensive condominiums. But the Salits are in effect telling the town, hell no, they won't go.
We talked about this when we were dating. I used to point to the houses and say, Joanne, one of these days we're going to have one of these houses. And I meant it. And I worked hard.
What'd you do?
I worked in the pharmaceutical industry. And we worked very hard for this. And paid it off, and we said, oh, we've got it. We paid off our home. I retired, and now we're going to spend the rest of our days here and pass this on to our children.
But Lakewood's mayor, Madeline Kane, has other plans. She wants to tear down the Salit's home, plus 55 homes around it, along with four apartment buildings and more than a dozen businesses, so that private developers can build high-priced condominiums and a high-end shopping mall, and thus raise Lakewood's property tax base.
This is a project.
The mayor told us she sought out a developer for the project because Lakewood's aging tax base has been shrinking and the city simply needs more money.
This is about Lakewood's future. Lakewood cannot survive without a strengthened tax base. Is it right to consider this a public good? Absolutely.
What you're saying effectively is that the Salit's neighborhood has to be sacrificed for the greater good of the city of Lakewood.
I guess I'm saying that that neighborhood is being asked to, and it's difficult and it's unfortunate that they are being asked to give up their home.
They want this whole area because of the view of the park.
Well, it's a beautiful view.
It is an awesome view. They know it's gorgeous and they want it. It's that simple.
This whole area is called Scenic Park, but that's the problem. Because it is so scenic, it's a prime place to build upscale condominiums. With great views over the Rocky River, those condos will be a cinch to sell.
But the condos can't go up unless the city can remove the Salits and their neighbors through eminent domain. And to legally invoke eminent domain, the city had to certify that this Scenic Park area is really, quote, blighted.
We're not blighted. This is an area that we absolutely love. It's a close-knit, beautiful neighborhood. It's what America's all about. And, Mike, you don't know how humiliating this is to have people tell you you live in a blighted area and how degrading this is.
You're the mayor. You know the place. Tell me what is blighted about that area.
The term blighted is a statutory word. It really doesn't have a lot to do with whether or not your home is painted. It is a legal
statutory
term.
Meaning?
That is used to describe an area. And the question is whether or not that area can be used for a higher and better use. Whether
What does that mean, a higher and better use? What's higher and better than a home?
The term blight is used to describe whether or not the structures generally in an area meet today's standards.
And it's the city that sets those standards. So Lakewood set a standard for blight that would include most of the homes in the neighborhood. A home could be considered blighted if it doesn't have the following.
3 bedrooms, 2 baths, an attached 2-car garage, and central air. Now, this community is over 100 years old. Who has all those things?
You mean it's blighted if it doesn't have 3 bedrooms?
Those things I just told you. That's the criteria. And it's ridiculous.
You don't have central air?
No, and we don't need it because of the air. We always have a breeze.
Sure.
Right off Lake Erie, the breeze comes right through here all the time. We counted all the attached garages in Lakewood. There's 20 in the whole city.
We counted 20.
And by the way, we got up at a meeting and told the mayor and all 7 council members their houses are blighted according to this criteria.
My understanding is that using the criteria that are in place, more than 90% of the houses in Lakewood could be deemed blighted, including the houses of the mayor and of every one of the city council members. True? Do you have 2 bathrooms?
No.
Blight. 2-car garage?
No.
Blight. Is the garage attached?
No.
Blight. And your lot size is under 5,000 square feet?
Oh, well under.
You've called that area a cute little neighborhood. You didn't call it a cute little blighted neighborhood. I mean, you and I know that it's not a blighted neighborhood.
I would never personally walk that neighborhood and indicate that that neighborhood is not attractive or... I mean, I would never say that.
It's a cute little neighborhood.
It is a cute little neighborhood. You'll get me to say it on the record. It is a cute little neighborhood.
Cute? Maybe. But without those new condos, it won't produce enough property taxes to satisfy the mayor and the city council.
That's no excuse for taking my home. My home is not for sale. And if my home isn't safe, nobody's home is safe in the whole country, not only Ohio, but this is rampant all over the country. It's like a plague.
This is a nationwide epidemic. We have documented more than 10,000 instances of government taking property from one person to give it to another in just the last 5 years.
Dana Berliner and Scott Bullock are attorneys at a libertarian nonprofit group called the Institute for Justice, which has filed suit on behalf of the Salites against the city of Lakewood. They claim that taking private property this way is unconstitutional.
It is fundamentally wrong and contrary to the Constitution for the government to take property from one private owner and hand it over to another private owner just because the government thinks that person is going to make more productive use of the land.
Everyone knows that property can be taken for a road, but nobody thinks that property can be taken to give it to their neighbor or the large business down the street for their economic benefit. People are shocked when they hear that this is going on around the country.
And it's not just people's homes that are the targets in these eminent domain cases. The Institute for Justice has also filed suit against the city of Mesa, Arizona, to save Randy Bailey's brake repair shop, the shop he got from his father and hopes someday to pass on to his son. The city of Mesa, citing the need for redevelopment, is trying to force Bailey to relocate to make way for an Ace Hardware store that would look better and pay more taxes.
Redevelopment to me is, work with the existing people there and redevelop.
Right.
Not... You get out, we're bringing this guy in.
Bailey's Brake Service has been on this corner for more than 30 years.
In Mesa, this is the corner, Main Street and Country Club. There's not a better corner in this city.
And business has been pretty good down the years?
Business has been awesome.
Now, what used to be in all of this property? I mean, everything else has disappeared.
The city come in and got immediate possession and started demolishing it, making it dirt.
The city has made dirt out of three restaurants and four businesses that once stood on this five-acre lot.
And it's not just business properties that they're doing this on. You know, they wiped out eight people's homes over here. You know, your home ain't even safe.
Bailey told us his neighbors let the city buy them out, but he's refusing to sell.
I'm standing in their way. I'm their thorn in their side.
A thorn in the side of Ken Linhart, who owns the Ace Hardware store a few blocks away. Linhart wants a much bigger store. He could have negotiated with Bailey, but instead, he convinced the city of Mesa to try to buy Bailey's land through eminent domain and then sell it to him.
The city of Mesa wants to move Mr. Bailey about a block away, and from what I understand, it's going to be a new building, new equipment, moving expenses, and everything set up for him. I don't see how Mr. Bailey's going to get hurt.
You can't replace a business in the same location. This place was built in 1952 as a break-in front-end shop. I don't care where you move into City Mesa, it would never be the same.
So Bailey went to Linhart looking for a way to stay on his corner.
I tried to go to him and see if we couldn't work something out on this, and he told me, no, there ain't room for you there. We're going to let the city just take care of you.
Did you ever sit down and try to negotiate with him?
No, I never did.
Redevelopment seems to me to make obvious good sense. But the right of eminent domain to take one man's private property, Randy Bailey, to give it, in effect, to Ken Linhart for his private property.
It happens all over the country. Practically any town you want to go to, they're redeveloping their town centers.
Right.
Now, are we going to sit in Mesa, Arizona, and have our town center decay? As a citizen of Mesa, I don't want that to happen.
If I'd had a for sale sign out there, it'd been a whole different deal. And for them to come in and tell me how much my property is worth, and for me to get out because they're bringing in somebody else, when I own the land, is unfounded to me. It don't even sound like the United States.
And this isn't happening just in small towns. Right here in New York City, a few blocks away from Times Square, New York State has forced a man to sell land on that corner over there that his family had owned for more than 100 years. And what's going up instead? A courthouse? A school? Nope. The new headquarters of the New York Times.
It seems the world's most prestigious newspaper wants to build a new home on this block. But Stratford Wallace and the block's other property owners did not want to sell. Wallace told us the newspaper never tried to negotiate with him. Instead, the Times teamed up with a major real estate developer, and together they convinced the state to use eminent domain to force Wallace out by declaring the block blighted.
I challenge them. This is not blighted property, nor is this property over here blighted.
But New York State Supreme Court disagreed. The court ruled that the newspaper's new headquarters would eliminate blight, and that even though a private entity, the New York Times, is the main beneficiary, improving the block would benefit the public. New York Times executives would not talk to us about it on camera. Back in Lakewood, Ohio, Jim and Joanne Salid are still waiting for their court decision. Most of their neighbors have agreed to sell if the project goes ahead, but the Salids plus a dozen others are hanging tough.
I thought I bought this place, but I guess I just leased it until the city wants it. That's what makes me very angry. This is my dream home, and I'm going to fight for it.
Now the fight is moving to the ballot box. Lakewood residents opposed to the development have gathered enough signatures to force a citywide referendum on it come November.
I remember the story of Helen. She was sick.
Listen to me. Rich people think differently. So what I'm going to put in your head today is a rich people concept so you can get to understand it. The only difference between successful people and not is just how they think. Rich people think different. Quit letting people tell you you got to get qualified in another program. You don't need another program to be successful. You need to change the way you think. So here's the deal. The problem with becoming a millionaire is that when you decide that you want to be a millionaire, you immediately start thinking, how can I become a millionaire? Well, that thought don't just pop into your head, so you get frustrated and you don't become a millionaire. And you start creating stuff like, well, I guess this wasn't the Lord's will, or as soon as I think of how I'm going to make a million. You can't think of how to make $1 million. Stop. Do you know if you knew how to make $1 million, what's the day, Tuesday? Wouldn't you make it by Friday? Wouldn't not you make it by Friday? But suppose I told you how you can become a millionaire with what you have. Because here's the deal. All of you have everything it takes to become rich. You just don't believe it. Now, if you can develop this theory that I'm about to share with you, I have the way for you to be rich. This is it. First of all of you have a gift. God gave it to you when he created you. God never created a single soul without giving them a gift. That's the God that created you. He's a very smart God. Hear the cold thing. When he made you, he put the gift inside of you. He didn't hide it under the ocean. It ain't on the mountain nowhere. It ain't under no rocks. You ain't got to go drilling. God put what you needed inside of you at birth. All of you have a gift. But you have got to do your gift, the thing God gave you at birth to do. It is the thing that you do the absolute best with the least amount of effort. That's your gift. Anything else you doing, you wasting your time. Do you hear me? You wasting your time. If when the alarm clock goes off in the morning and it makes you sick every morning that alarm go off, it's because you ain't doing your gift. You're going against what God created you to be. Do most of you know what your gift is? Who in here doesn't know their gift yet? Okay, let me tell you what you do. Go home today. Don't talk to nobody. Sit down and have one conversation with yourself. What is the thing that I do the absolute best with the least amount of effort? This ain't going to take you long. You old enough, you grown. Write it down. I don't care if it's networking. I don't care if it's babysitting. I don't care if it's doing color. I don't care if it's painting. Whatever it is, it's what you do. Sing it. Whatever you do the best, write it down. That's your gift. That's it. You ain't got to go asking a bunch of people. They've been telling you your whole life. You know, you ever have people call you with their problems? They always call you with your problems because you gifted at it. But you didn't know how to identify it. If you identify your gift. Now, let me ask you this question. This thing that you're gifted at, if you did it for somebody, do you think somebody would pay you $10 for your gift? Just $10. Could you babysit for $10? Could you cut somebody's hair for $10? Could you cut their grass for $10? Could you make them a chicken dinner for $10? Could you do something for $10? Everybody, don't you have something somebody would give you $10 for? Okay, now, once you have something that somebody's willing to pay you $10 for, this is how this works. It's called the multiples of 10. See, you don't have to figure out how to be a millionaire. You just got to figure out the thing that makes you $10. So now here we go. You do it and you make $10. Soon as they pay you the 10, go do it 10 more times. Whatever it was. Watch some more kids. 10 more times. Get another 10. You got $100. When you get $100, whatever you did to make that $100, listen to me, do it 10 more times. You ain't got to get tricky with it. Just do it 10 more times. You'd have made $1,000. Whatever you did to make the $1,000, don't get smart. Stay stupid now. Do it 10 more times. You have now made $10,000. Hold up. Now we finna grow a little bit, but guess what you got to do to grow? You just got to do some more. Whatever you made $10,000 doing, I need you to do it 10 more times. What you tripping for? If you do it 10 more times, you got $100,000. Now, you might have to hire some people to make this happen. You got to figure that part out. But all you got to do is do what you did for $10. Once you make $100,000, uh-oh, if you just do it 10 more times.
Chinese e-commerce company Alibaba has surpassed last year's Singles' Day sales record. The firm's online sales brought in an eye-watering $38 billion U.S. dollars in a single day on Monday. Now, among the four nations taking part, South Korean companies enjoy the third highest sales numbers. Lee Sing Jae reports.
November 11th is Singles' Day in China, and also the day of the world's biggest online shopping bonanza. Smashing last year's record of $30.8 billion, Alibaba, China's biggest e-commerce company, set a new record on Monday, logging an astonishing $38 billion in sales. However, the on-year increase of about 25% is slightly lower than the rate of growth Alibaba recorded in 2018, when the company reported a 27% jump. Analysts say the slightly weaker growth this year comes amid China's slowing economy and Beijing's trade war with the United States. Singles Day is also an opportunity for South Korean companies, as the Chinese market is home to 1.3 billion consumers. A considerable amount of South Korean companies record sales higher than their annual sales on Singles Day alone. K-Beauty, which is popular in China, have helped sales of Korean cosmetic brands such as Amore Pacific, LG Household and Healthcare, and Aegyung explode. For the second straight year, South Korea was third among foreign countries to have sold the most goods on Singles Day. From midnight on Monday to 1 a.m. the following day, 84 South Korean companies enjoyed combined sales of over $14 million. South Korean companies only trailed U.S. and Japanese firms in terms of sales. South Korea first made the top three in 2016. However, tensions between Seoul and Beijing over South Korea's deployment of the THAAD missile defense system saw the country slump to fifth in 2017. Lee Sung-jae, Arirang News.
We are just 26 days away from the trial of one of the officers who ended up responding, Derek Chauvin. That will begin, again, in 26 days. As we get you ready for that trial, because we will have gavel-to-gavel coverage right here on Court TV, cameras inside the courtroom, microphones in there. You'll see all the evidence. You will hear the testimony and the arguments made in that case and ultimately the verdict. So tonight, Court TV legal correspondent Chanley Painter was in Minneapolis and had an opportunity to go inside Cup Foods and speak with the owner at length and really get a better idea for the neighborhood, the better idea of the store and the impact and that day. Let's take a look.
Cup Foods is a very family-oriented neighborhood convenience store. We've been here since 1989. It's been my first and only job. We know almost all of our customers. We know customers that are now grandparents that were teenagers when they first started coming here. We know a lot of family members and kids and relatives that are loyal and continue to do business with us because of how well we have a relationship with them.
Why did your family choose this location to set up shop?
It was a closed-down pharmacy. It was a Wilhelm drugstore before us, and they just seen potential, and they kind of just put their trust and went forward with it. It was always pretty multicultural, very diverse, pretty peaceful, and it was just a friendly neighborhood community. You know, first names, nicknames, last names, you'd be surprised.
Take us back to May 25th, 2020. What was that day like?
Well, Floyd came in here. His associate came in the store first and tried to purchase some tobacco products and used a counterfeit bill. And the clerk noticed that it was a counterfeit bill right away. And gave the bill back to him and told him that it wasn't a real bill. And at that point, he left out of the store. And then a few minutes later, Floyd entered the store. He had phone service through the store. He came in and he purchased some tobacco products with a counterfeit bill as well.
He may have not known that it was a counterfeit bill.
Which happens often.
Did you know George Floyd?
I did. I didn't know him as well as I know a lot of other customers, but I did know him. I did recognize him, And from the times that we've, you know, had conversations, never had an issue with him.
Mommy, how did you find out what was happening right outside your front door here?
I got a phone call from my employee, and my employee said, hey, they're killing him. I got a little confused and concerned. I said, who are you talking about? She said, hey, they're killing him. So I told her to call the police on the police and record the incident. She did record it, but unfortunately she didn't call the police like I told her to.
You said call the police on the police. Why had that become a normal incident response for you?
There was an incident here in the past about 5-7 years ago where there was a cop that was harassing customers and harassing people that had nothing to do with the crime and the issues that were taking place, and eventually he got in trouble because somebody called the police on him. You know, calling the police shouldn't equate to a death threat or a death sentence to someone because of any crime, let alone a nonviolent crime.
What do you say to those who believe that but for your store calling 911 that night, George Floyd would still be alive?
We can only pray for him.
Look, we just want to make sure that, you know, that everyone realizes that this was not a malicious call. This wasn't Rebecca in the park. This was a protocol. And even from that call that was placed here, it may have emanated here, but it should not be equated to the death of George Floyd or to any black man that has the police called on him. We hope that we are setting the tone for going forward what shouldn't happen when there's an interaction or some type of encounter with an officer. That black male, that brown male, should leave that encounter with his life.
I think that we've been an example for a lot of other businesses and places where patrons come in if they have either counterfeit bail or any kind of crime takes place. And I think Cut Foods now has kind of been the spotlight as to what can or could happen if the authorities are called on a person of color.
What has the last several months been like for you? I know that you tried to reopen once and then permanently reopened again in August of last year. How has this business been affected?
A lot of people said they were going to burn the store down, burn the city down, and it just was protected. It was a lot of the community members, specifically the ones that, you know, were our regular patrons, stood outside overnight and just protected our business and protected the whole community. It's just been everybody, every situation is different. Everybody's had their own agenda. A lot of people have been trying to find a justification for what happened, and when they have no one else to blame, they blame us.
They didn't tuck their tails and run like some business owners would, especially with the extreme death threats my move received. They stayed steadfast with the community, because that's what the store is. It's a community store, and they stuck around. And I think that has to speak volumes. And that's what CUP has been about, trying to make going forward, is try to create a healing space and create a healing process. I hope that the trial encompasses more healing. I think a guilty verdict goes a long way.
Tell us about some of the changes that you've made since George Floyd's death.
We definitely made sure. Police calls now are not going to be taken unless there's an actual violent crime taking place. We've been policing our own matters and training our employees that if the police ever need to be called, make sure it's done by a manager. We were here every day, you know, supporting the cause and being as supportive as we can, you know, giving out a lot of things too, had a lot of produce giveaways and grocery giveaways and milk giveaways.
The commissioning of the mural.
The mural. For the most part, our community was very supportive of us. We had a lot of bystanders, a lot of people that want to come from all over the country.
Yeah.
We had a guy a couple weeks ago drive here from Houston and said, this is the first place I have to stop. And he just came in and took a look, took pictures and asked a few questions, and we get that on a day-to-day basis. Yeah.
CUP is not staying open in spite of anyone. CUP is a community-based store, has been for 31 years, 31 and a half years. This is why his father opened this store and was a great man, was a giving man. I remember that because I grew up in this store. I've seen the maturation of the store and of the community, and this is a thriving community that, in spite of this, will keep growing and keep surviving.
Your business has been in this community for more than 30 years. What do you think is the secret to its longevity?
prayer and just being true to your customers and just being there for them and truly helping out those that are in need.
Mahmoud, what is justice for you in this case?
Justice is knowing you can call the authorities and not have to worry about somebody getting killed.
Mm.
Justice is no racial profiling. Justice is not having to worry about the color of your skin if the police are called. I mean, that's what justice really is. This is a country where you shouldn't have to worry about racial injustices. And unfortunately, we still have a lot of racism in this country, and until that's fixed, it's going to be something that's going to always have to hang around your head.
Again, our thanks to the folks at Cups Food for letting us in and to give America a better idea of that neighborhood, that store, and that day.
All right, today's last podcast for It's My House for the year, 2021. And we're going into 2022. What's today's podcast titled? Community Meal Partners. So we've got, we got a potential of three new ones. You want a total of 10 total, including me. I wanted the 10. So we picked up three 2 days ago. I got to confirm that today or this weekend. And I believe today it's 1,975 podcasts of It's My House. 1,000, actually more than that, because I know one guy, I accidentally deleted it in the early years, and I couldn't get the interview back from the guy. But what we have archived is 1,975. So we're knocking at the door of 2,000. So what will be – now, we're mapping out 2021. We just had to – actually, we already know the dates. We just had to officially put them down. But we're also going to be – because this is – we're in year eight. We started year eight, December the 24th of this month. So what we shall be doing in January – in addition to our offline projects, we're also going to be using our community meal team consisting of 10 people. We're going to be mapping out 2023 and 2024. So we're planning 12 to 24 months. We're planning 24 months out. We're not going to wait until November, December of the year. We're planning, we got our marching orders for this year, but we're also going to be planning out 2023 and 2024. And that 2024 gives that's a decade of its miles. All right. So we'll be taking you through, matter of fact, we're going to map all that out in January. 2023 and 2024. I'm mapping all that out next week. And mind you, it'll just be the first week in January. But we already got our marching orders. We already know what path we have to carve out to set up 2023 and 2024. And we're tying it in to the number of podcasts we've done. And one of the things that I've taken a look at over the, really, I guess it's a hobby of mine, is emerging markets. Emerging markets. I glossed over a book this morning. I got to order it. It's titled Homesick, Living in My Shed. I'm paraphrasing, but you know what? I'm going to play an audio from Marie TV. Marie TV is about a young lady, African-American, black woman here in this country. She was pregnant at 15, had a child at 16. She didn't get on social services or nothing like that. She went and purchased a shed and converted the shed into a tiny house. Is domiciled in her parents' backyard. I'm looking at that as one of the emerging markets. That's an industry in the making. Actually, it's a few. Converting sheds into tiny houses, single females, young single teen mothers with no mate, becoming financially sustainable, but just doing what Marie TV did. That's, and there's a whole bunch of other things that we can connect to that. That's what I would call an emerging market. So what we're doing offline, I consider emerging. It's not mainstream, but more and more people will be doing it. I'm going to play something off of Marie TV. You'll hear her actually herself speak. Then we'll be back.
No angel, but you got a halo. When it starts like this, I really want to be right here.
Why does it look like you're in like some type of construction type thing? Well, your girl got her a little like, keep watching videos. I'm gonna just do this like short little intro. I recently just decided to do this. This was kind of like a last minute thing. Like, this isn't nothing I've been saving up for or anything like that. I came across one and like I really liked it. I was just showing it to my mom like, and we got to thinking like, I'm in college. I have a son, of course, a teen mother, and, like, having my own space, but still not having to be away from my mom because, like, I love her and, like, I depend on her for almost everything that I do. This was a good alternative to that. So what we did was we looked for them, we browsed around. We found one at first, but it didn't really work out, and I was, like, super bummed. And then we found this one, which is, like, even better. I'm going to show y'all what it looked like before. I'm going to insert a few pictures right here while I'm talking. So before we bought it already completely finished. So we didn't have to go in and do the hardwood because the way that they start out, I'm going to insert a picture right here. It's kind of like this up here. So the whole building was like this. So this is like a shed, it's a tiny home build, that type of thing. We didn't have to do that much labor again because like the wall and the insulin, it is insulated. It has wall, it has flooring. The top is actually done to the shed. So that's the top. Everything was already done, which is a huge blessing, okay? Because getting hardwood and doing the walls, insulating, is a bunch of money. When I say a bunch, it is a bunch. I tried to do one myself before, me and my sister, like a couple years back, and the money and getting the insulation, the flooring, and all that was just, whoo. If you can find one that's already done, I advise you just to get it if you're looking into getting something like this. The marketplace is a really good thing. I got a great deal on this. Usually they run for about $10,000 to $15,000, but I only paid around $5,000 for mine. Honey, $5,000, that is great. So we're gonna get right into the video, and I'm about to give y'all a little tour so y'all can see how it goes down in my little house, my little, yeah.
All right, guys, so I'm gonna start off with that outside. This is pretty dark because I am recording at nighttime. You know, I just have a window. I have electric throughout the whole thing, so there's like a plug right there for that. I have another plug. It runs all the way to the back. I have a mailbox, but nobody wants to put it up for me, so I'm just gonna sit that right there. All right, and this is my door, It has like a window on it as well. I have like a little welcome mat too, so you know, wipe your feet before you come. All right, so this is it. All right, so it's all kind of like one room. It's not like different rooms or anything like that. I didn't feel like I needed anything that big because it's just me and it's just Kate. So we can start over here in the TV area. I have a TV. It's supposed to be on the wall. It's sitting on the thing. It's not going to be like that. Eventually somebody's going to put it on the wall. I'm too little to put it on the wall. So down here we just have like magazines, my Polaroid camera, my high school diploma, some like random books just for like kind of decoration. We have this right here with all like the smell good stuff and my candle. I need a new candle. Likely when my sister comes over or my other sister, they always take this out and they don't put it back up. But yeah, so, and then up under there is like bags. So I use bags for trash and things like that. Just like a convenient space to put right there, put the blankets and pillows on top. And then because it's so tiny in here, you have to make what you got with storage. So that's a good storage thing right here. Okay, on this side we have the living room area. So I have a couch right here. This is actually also a pull-out couch. Hold on. Ta-da! So it also turns into a bed, which is great for, again, when my sisters come over. Because I do like to stay in here sometimes. Or if I have a friend over, I don't have any friends. $98, y'all, which is like really good because it's really convenient. It really fits the space well, so it's not like too crowded in here. Like, it's still a good enough space. On this side, I have my favorite freaking blanket. Oh my gosh, y'all, this is so like, this is like the best blanket in the world. And I got this from Walmart as well. And then I have like a little basket. I don't remember where I got this from. I think it's Ross. And this right here is great for storage. As you can see, I have a lot of crap in there. We're not going to look at it. But yeah, so I just had a blanket right there, and that's for me because I love that blanket. And then right here we have my bed. I had to downsize to like a twin bed because of my other room, as y'all seen in my twin video. I had a bigger bed, but if I had a bigger bed, it would take up this whole space. And it's just me and Caden. Sometimes Caden sleeps on the couch. So, I mean, I don't really need a big old bed. I'm single. Yeah. Right here we have these lights, like, and they're ombre. You can't really see them. Oh, you can see them. You can see. Okay, well, yeah. I got these from...
What's up, TJ Maxx?
No one's seen them. I think it's Burke's Outlet in the mall. They were only, like, $5. Right here, I got this from Five Below. That's if y'all want to decorate anything, go to Five Below. To Ross, go to Walmart, and go to Target. That's the only place I went to get all this stuff. I think I did it under like $600, like the whole everything. And that's the pots, the pans, the you'll see all that stuff later. But yeah, so I got this from Five and Below, and it says YouTube Marie TV. If we had the R fell off, I have to replace it, but it's up in the storage area.
Okay.
And I'm gonna put another R. And then we have my Instagram, Bad Gal Marie. Y'all go follow me. Another thing I have right here that is like really cool, this. So you know how you always lose a charger base? I don't have to worry about that because I have my own plug, and it came like this. Again, like I said in the intro, everything was already fully done in here. I didn't have to do like the hardwood floors or anything like that. All right, and right here I just have, don't put my toes in there. I have this. I got this from Polar Bear Rug, whatever you want to call it. And then I have a mirror right here. And then I have another mirror right here. Hey. And then I have like a little light up candle and a heater. And it was only, been cold. We turned it on one time. We turned the heater on one time and like it heated the whole building. Like it started getting hot. I had to unplug it. And then for when it's too hot, which I usually, this works very well. It cools like the whole thing. Like seriously, it
gets too cold in here, and my sister,
you tell
me
why?
It gets way too cold, so we have to turn it off. Like, it's really good. I have really good heating and airing in here without having to have, like, a big unit or anything. So now let's go over to, like, the kitchen area. Right here is the good, baby. This is the good. This is where you know. I haven't even cooked here yet. I'm waiting to make a video. Make this video first, and then my first time cooking, I'm going to make a video for that cooking in the tiny house. So stay tuned for that. But I have all my food. I have the pantry, snacks, cereal, all that good stuff. I have a one-year-old, and he's three. Here, if you remember in my, when I cleaned up my room, this was actually my makeup chair, my makeup desk, and I turned it into like a, a little table, because I was looking at getting a big table, and they were like $80, probably more than that, and I was like, I don't need a huge table in here. So we came home, and my mom was like, go get that desk, and we put it right here, and it worked perfectly. So all I had to do was buy this chair, and I got this chair from Walmart, and this chair cover from Walmart. Right here, I have a little napkin holder with all my mail and things, and then also the napkins. I just bought this yesterday. Isn't this so cute? I do not care, because it's getting spooky season, so I went ahead and I bought some popcorn things, you know, because we finna watch movies in here. Like, it's a whole body house, so the body is, like, amazing. Like, it's still, like, a free spirit. Like, it's just cool. Like, okay, and then up here I have my, this is just something my mom
would
like.
What is that?
These are for candles. I don't have candles for them yet. I'm going to buy candles. As y'all can see before, my candle is, like, completely done for. And then I have my seasonings back here. And my pots and pans are, like, fairly, really, really clean, because I have not used them again. Oops. I have to wait till I get into this video, then we can cook. Alright, so coming over here, this is, like, my favorite area, because, like, it's just so freaking cute, like, a mini kitchen. Like, okay, so I have the microwave, standard microwave, and then I have this oven right here. And I did make something in here, but I didn't cook
a pizza.
Yeah, I made a pizza in here. And this, like, milk sweetener.
I'm doing it.
Yeah. It's, like, literally, it has these. You can move it. Like, this was $99 on sale at Target. It comes with toast, baked, grilled, default pizza. Literally, this is like an oven, a mini oven. It really works very well. And then, are you still doing this?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we have this right here, one single burner. It heats up really good. I have, my mother has another one in the house, so if I'm needing two, just a flop. If I'm needing two, I can just go in and use my mom's. So this is like my favorite part of the kitchen area, this backdrop. This is actually not like this. I got this at Walmart. It's like a sticker thing, and like, you stick it onto the wall, and it just made it like a really nice accent piece. Accent. This says chop it like it's hot, and then watch me whip.
Chop it like it's hot.
Anyway, when I seen this, it was just so freaking adorable to me. Like, I just laughed. My mom laughed. Like, we're just going to be okay. But, yeah, I got these from Ross, and I think I still got the tag on them. Only $5, literally $4.99. Like, can you beat that? I just got this yesterday, which was a good addition, because, like, once I used dishes, I didn't know where to put them. So, I got this little bucket from Dollar Tree yesterday, and my dirty dishes, I'm putting them in there. I have my refrigerator. I got peppers and onions and vegetables at the top. Corn dogs, and I got cookies and pizza rolls and just the normal stuff. Like, when I have bigger stuff, like chicken or anything I need to, like, cook, I keep it in the house, because my house has a bigger refrigerator, a way bigger, and if I keep it in my mini fridge, it could go bad. So, if you're not planning on putting one, like, beside your house or beside a house that, you would, like, able to, because literally, my house, the tiny house right here, and my house is, like, literally right here, so I can just walk over. So, yeah, and then, that's what I do for showers and stuff and getting ready in the morning. I just walk over to the house. Over here, because you have to go over here. Over here I have two oven mitts, and then I also have these cute things, and they're rose gold and white, and I've never seen them like that, and I just thought they were so freaking cute. And then I just have two oven mitts and things.
right here. I have way more dishes than this. Parents have to do them because,
I already did them, I'm in the house.
Oh, well, I just have to move them out here. But literally, y'all, these dishes at Target was 33 cents. Each one was like from 33 to 50 cents. None of them was over that. And all of them are, BPA free. I don't know what that means, but it sounds like it means something pretty good. I have this right here. My mom found it. I don't know where she got this from, but it was so cute and it matched my dishes and stuff. I have more pots and pans right here. And then I have cups. I have way more cups than these. I don't know where they went.
In the house.
And then I have this cute mini pitcher because I don't make Kool-Aid, but I'll make something in here. Maybe like some tea or something like that. I want Kool-Aid. Right here I have my high school diploma. Part 2. I have to put pictures in there from graduating. My tassel's in the car, so that's probably not gonna be. I don't want to go upstairs, so what I'm going to do is I'm going to extend this.
Did you tell y'all where I'm at before I get down? This is kind of like where I edit. This is my MacBook. This is from the Biggest Zoo vlog. I know y'all remember Baby Dark. If you do, comment below. But, and I got this from Florida, the Florida vlog. If you watch that, comment below too. But, yeah, so this was just like a chill spot. And it has lights attached inside of this thing right here too at nighttime. And it's like a really kind of chill space. I'm also, like I said, in college. So going up here, you know, studying or reading or anything like that, that is great.
We're going to cut the light off so you can see how it looks. Those lights react to music, so like
on this one. Oh, you look weird.
Those lights react to music. You can't really see. Alright guys, I think that's probably gonna be the end of this video. Oh, I forgot, tell them something out there. That's storage. Like that's where I keep like clothes and things that I'm not wearing. And also I forgot to show you, I have these up under my bed. Really, really, really big pull outs. Like my clothes are a mess right now. But yeah, them up there, I forgot to show y'all that. I'm thinking I need to get like a picture frame and then like a little mini plant or something to go right there. This right here, this is like my favorite picture ever. I'm gonna read all that, y'all can read it. Just another little decoration things that we got going on right here. That's probably gonna be the end of this little tiny house tour. Whatever you wanna call it. So make sure y'all like, comment, subscribe.
Hey, really, Ron?
Shut up.
There's a couple questions that I feel like would be asked. Again, I know I said it in the video, but for a bathroom and things like that, it's all in my mom's house. It's literally right next door, like literally right. So I would just walk over there. That's not a problem for me because, like I said, I'm a college student. If I was in college right now, you don't have bathrooms and stuff in your dorm room. So this is kind of basically like a little dorm room for me. You would have to walk and stuff to get to take showers and do stuff like that anyway. What is that? What is that?
Trying to cut that out.
I feel like it was a good fit for me. If you don't feel like it's a good fit for you, I'm not telling you to go out and buy a tiny house and spend all your, well, I didn't spend all my money, but spend a good amount of money on doing this if it's not something you want to do. Me personally, I've always been into like tiny living, like the bus bills, the van bills, all that type of stuff. I've always been into that. Like even my family can detest. Like ain't that right there?
No.
And I've always wanted it, and now that I'm blessed enough to like be able to get this, is so I just felt like it was a good fit. I feel like somebody would ask, how is it living in here with Caden? Honestly, it is a way better than being in my house. My house is more stuff he can get into. He likes to go downstairs and I'm upstairs having to chase after him. He's always messing and everything. Right here in this particular space, I can sit on my bed. I can see him playing in like the living room area. He can sit on my bed. We can literally watch.
Hi, my name is...
It's May 8th, 2015 on Friday. The time is 10:25 p.m. And up next from Amanda Froelich. This is dated April 12th, 2015. This man...
The story behind this mansion is just about as stunning as the home itself.
I built this house not just for my immediate family, but for my extended family, including friends.
Reggie Van Lee was a performer in the Alvin Ailey Dance Company. The Harvard graduate recently retired as an executive vice president at a Houston consulting firm. He moved out of his home in River Oaks after building this 20,000 square foot estate for himself, his three sisters, and their families.
There's a hair salon for my sisters. The pool is for the grandkids.
Well, this kitchen was designed for this house by my wife, TJ.
Mark Zafars lives here. He's married to Reggie's sister.
It's fine. We each have our own space, mm-hmm. So we can see each other as often as we want.
That's why the 59-year-old says he built this house so their family could make many memories together.
As much as people say, oh, that's so nice of you to do this for your sisters, they have no idea the joy I get myself.
Well, this is my favorite room.
It's a small church inside the house. This wing sort of resembles a fancy apartment building hallway. Here you'll find doors that lead to private living quarters.
My front door is real. We each have a kitchen. We have a living room. We have a washer-dry area, and we have two bedrooms, one master and a guest, mm-hmm. And then each of those have bathrooms, separate bathrooms.
You arrive at the master suite on a separate side of the home. Notice this picture of Reggie with Rosa Parks, this one with President Clinton, and this photo with former First Lady Michelle Obama. The unconventional family man worked with the Clinton Foundation, was appointed to a couple of committees by President Obama, and got the idea to build a family estate when he was invited to the Kennedy compound by Caroline Kennedy.
In 1976, this little black boy from Sunnyside said, I'd like to have a family compound someday.
In case you're wondering, the benevolent brother isn't the only one picking up the tab. His oldest sister, Carolyn, for instance, is a retired HISD educator and still teaches at an area college.
We all contribute to the pot of money that covers the food and covers the housekeeper and covers the groundskeeper and covers the utilities.
They're talking about it in hopes of encouraging other families to follow suit, even if on a smaller scale.
I think other people should do that. I think if we did more of that, we'd have more happiness in the world, and a lot less tension.
I'm Domalee Keith, Fox 26 News.
This is out of control.
Liz Gold and her family have lived in their 1890s rehabbed home in Ravenswood since 2001. They'd hoped to stay until they were hit with their recent Cook County property tax bill that may force them out.
Overall for the year, it increased by 60%.
60%?
60%. We're now paying almost $21,000, $20,200.
Versus what, about?
12.
Gold says the extra $800 a month they need to find to pay their new yearly bill erased any college money they'd hope to save for their youngest son.
I'm not getting a $10,000 a year raise. My husband won't be getting a $10,000 a year raise. I don't know how we're going to make that happen. It's not feasible for us to absorb that cost.
It's sticker shock being felt by hundreds, if not thousands, of Chicago property owners right now, especially these North Side, after their homes were reassessed by the Cook County Assessor's Office last year.
So 2011, you're like 7,300, and by 2018, you're over 16,000. Thank you.
For Steve Willowhite, that amounts to a 26% property tax increase this year. That's after he appealed his tax bill and won.
I can handle a single digit, 4, 5, 6%, because I can find that in the budget, and you kind of expect things to go up over time. But when it's that precipitous, it's hard to find that money.
Property taxes help fund a variety of county and city services. But in Illinois, a growing percentage of that money goes to funding government pensions.
There are a great number of people in this office who came in under Assessor Kagi, who
it is not an exaggeration to say, are kept up at night worrying about getting this work right.
But Smith refused to answer any other questions about the current tax bills on camera, attributing the increases and assessments to the prior administration under Joe Berrios. And that included talking about the fairness of the current assessments and how families are expected to swallow the massive hike.
I just don't understand how there's not some sort of ceiling on this, or a cap of some sort. If we could plan for it, it would be different.
Now Gold's planning on leaving.
We probably will end up moving from Chicago.
I reached out to Cook County Board President Tony Preckwinkle's office yesterday to ask how homeowners are expected to absorb these massive tax jumps. No one got back to me. A spokesperson for Mayor Lori Lightfoot says she'd get back to me on the matter later, and we definitely plan to follow up there. In the newsroom, Dana Kozloff, CBS 2 News. Brad and Erica.
All right, Dana, thank you.
And that's happening not only in Chicago, but around the globe. And that's where we're moving offline. I mean, we'll still be online, but our offline activities. We're going to capitalize on, a tax rate hike on 60%, that's quite a bit. And who gets a 60% raise on a typical job? There's a book I ran across early this morning. It's titled Homesick. The book is titled Homesick, Why I Live in a Shed by Katrina Davis, and Katrina is spelled with a C. And she's over in England. But you just heard an audio earlier right over here in the United States with Marie TV. She bought a shed and converted it into a tiny house. Really, a tiny house is really nothing but a glorified shed anyway. That's just my definition. So I'm going to throw out a stat up. I've thrown out here before. You're going to hear more in 2022. In the United States, and we're going to go country by country as it, you know, when in the new year, but here the United States sets. Because not every place is the same, even within the country. There are 19,500 municipal corporations in the United States, give or take, 19,500 cities that are incorporated. Now, you have unincorporated, I had to get those stats, but there are 19,500 municipalities. Let's just simplify towns in the United States. Out of those, that 19,500, only 10 of them have a population of 1 million people or more. Now, Chicago is one of them. The 10 largest cities in the United States, and I don't know if I'm at the order right, New York is number one. Let's see, New York, my dog's running across my stomach, that's why. Anyway, New York City is number one. Los Angeles, California is number two. I believe it's number two. Chicago, Illinois is number three. Now I'm going to try to fill out the rest of the 10. They're not going to be in any particular order. In Texas has got Houston, Dallas, and San Antonio. They're in the top 10 largest cities in the United States with a population of over 1 million or more. Let's see. Is San Diego, you know what? Let me do this right. Okay. largest cities in the United States. I think I got most of them, and I don't have all of them, but okay, here we go. All right, New York is number one. Over 8,622,357 people. Los Angeles is number two, 4,085,014 people. Chicago, 2,670,406 people. Houston, Texas is the fourth largest, 2,378,146. All right, number five, Phoenix, Arizona, 1,743,469. Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, 1,590,402. San Antonio, Texas is number seven, 1,579,504. San Diego, okay, California's got three in here. You've got, Jesus, man. All right. Once again, there are 19,500 municipalities in the United States. Texas has three of those cities. Houston, Dallas, and San Antonio. Houston's number four. San Diego is number five. Number eight. And Dallas is number nine. California has three in the top ten. San Jose with 1,036,242. San Diego, 1,469,490. And L.A., Los Angeles, California, 4,085,014. So we have a significant percentage of the United States that lives in those 10 cities out of 19,000. Now, you got more rules and regulations. You know, you got crazy zoning, but you know what? The more people, the more rules and regulations you need. That's just the nature of the beast. Now, here's another stat. 47% of the population of the United States lives in cities, or rather towns, that have 1,000 people or less. That's where you'll find the real United States of America. Because in these top 10 cities that I just named, you're not going to build a tiny house. You're not going to build it. Simple as that. A lot of stuff that we talk about, off the grid stuff, you can't do it in those top 10 cities. They're not going to allow you to build a $5,000 house. We play on here all the time, Solar Cabin by Lamar Alexander. He built his cabin for $2,000. You're not going to do that in New York City. You're not going to do it. You're not going to do it in San Diego, Dallas, Houston, San Antonio, San Jose, San Diego. You're not going to do it. There's a host of other cities that I'm not going to allow you to do it either. However, once again, 47%, that's nearly half of the population of the United States, live in towns that have 1,000 people or less. In those places, you can do it. Maybe not all of them, but a lion's share of them, you can do it. You can do it. Anybody who's listening to this podcast, you can buy 40 acres of land on the cheap. But you can even buy it. But you know what? You're not going to go to New York City and buy 40 acres, let alone buy 40 acres on the cheap. In any event, I highly recommend the book. I got to get it myself. I just ran across it this morning. It's titled Homesick. It's not available in ebook because I would have had it by now, but it's in hardback, or I'm going to see if I can get her on here, the author, Katrina Davis. Katrina spelled with a C. Homesick, Why I Live in a Shed. She didn't say tiny house. Why I Live in a Shed. And she's got some videos on YouTube. Why I Live in a Shed. The book is titled Homesick, subtitled Why I Live in the Shed. And it says, an incredibly moving book to find peace and sense of home after life is so profoundly affected by the housing crisis is truly inspirational. Now, Katrina Davies' story takes place in England. She had to, this place doesn't take place in London, England. She had to go to Cornwall, which is a less populated area of England, to do this. But there's a lot of Katrina Davises that live in Canada, United States. They're all over the globe. Because these larger municipalities, think about it. Any of the top 10 cities that I just named in the United States, and they have government workers, you know, people who collect your trash, people at the DMV, people with the municipal court system, people at the municipal, the police department, the firemen, these are all government workers. Some of them are unionized government workers. And they got to make a payroll every 2 weeks. And the reason why a lot of people work for the government psychologically, because they know they're going to get paid hello high water every 2 weeks. They also stay on those jobs and make them a career because they want that guaranteed retirement check to come in. So these local governments, they got a pension, they got to cut pension checks every month in addition to paying the government workers every 2 weeks. And then finance, you know, any other thing they might have going on. So where are these local governments, where are these local state and even federal government, where are they getting them? They're getting it from the homeowner. That's where they're getting. So I'm trying to find my studio again. That ain't it. I got to find my blog. So wait a minute. No, that's not it. So, you know, what can you do? You know, you can get a tent. You know, historically, Native Americans, they don't get attached to the land like us modern Westerners do. They get a teepee, they know how to insulate it, and they move with the seasons. They're good. They don't have no mortgages to pay on no TP. In Mongolia, in parts of Asia, you know, you have people that live in yurts. Yurts are basically tents also. And, you know, they move with the seasons. And it gets cold in Mongolia. Eskimos in some of your, you know, polar climates of the planet, they don't get attached to any one place. And they know how to use natural resources, ice, and build igloos, and those are insulated. You don't have to go to Home Depot, Menards, any place like that. So you've got modern man that, you know what, I just can't hang in Chicago no more. The property taxes. You know, some people play the system. They might live in, pick a city, New York, San Francisco, Oakland. And that's their lifestyle. They know how to play they know how to go to shelters and they know the system. That's their lifestyle. You got a bunch of people living in their cars now, voluntarily, vans. And that's why we have these community meals. So, and people, I'm on a brand new phone. And I'm learning how to operate it. So, let's see. Yeah, I'm learning how to operate it. So, I've had it for maybe a week or so, a little over a week, less than 2 weeks. So I'm getting a little bit better at it every day, but all right, that's not right. And I got to figure out how to access my emails. Anyway, but I'm going through a learning curve on this one. More so than usual. Because this phone's a little bit, wouldn't say it's got more going on with it. So, in any event, I'm just seeing what, all right, that's not working. Okay, well, all right, I'm trying to navigate. Now it appears to be stuck. I'm trying to get it unstuck here in my studio. Okay. Now, let's see if that'll do it. In any event, but yeah, that's that's why we've expanded to Clubhouse. We still have here in Blog Talk. Then we're running archive shows. Same time we're running It's My House on other channels. Next week, we'll be back on the 3rd, which is Monday. Tomorrow's the 1st, which is a Saturday. So we got Patrick Collins. He should be coming through. He is resurrected Westside Preparatory School, which his mother started, Marva Collins. So he'll be in to talk about that. And Lieutenant Manuel Fields from Reentry TV, we'll have him in. Darlene Lewis, we'll have her in as well. And I'm trying to get this phone out. Well, okay, I can't. Pianki, I see you, and I'm trying to get to you, but oh, man. Okay. Oh, well, while I'm thinking about it, Happy New Year to everybody. In Australia, the New Year's here, 2022. And in Hong Kong, it's already here. In Southeast Maritime Asia, Philippines, Indonesia, those places, Happy New Year. They're 35 minutes into the new year. All right. I'm pressing buttons, folks. And hold, wait a minute. Let me, one more thing here, all right. Let's see what that does. All right, Blog Talk's not the problem, and the phone's not the problem, but I'm operating the phone, and I'm going to look. Yesterday I did all right with it, though. Today, I'm... Yeah, because Priyanka, I was trying to get to you. Hold on, let's see. Oh, man. Okay, let's see. Try one last time. And, yeah, I might have to get something This is by touch, but I might have to get a... Wait. Okay, now if I can... I got that. All right, let me see if this will work. Okay, 314, your mic is open.
Ellie, what they doing to you?
No, I'm just learning how to use this phone. Got a new one.
Oh, you got a new phone?
Yeah, got a new phone.
I'm waiting on the Samsung.
I'll have it.
21 to come out.
Huh?
I said I'm waiting on the Samsung 2021 to come out. Should be.
When's
here.
That gonna be out?
Last time I was reading, they said around February, March.
Well, that's soon. What's the ballpark price on it?
Yeah, I've seen some prices. It depends on how much memory you want, but $1,600,
$1,600. Yeah, that's what they go. But you know what? Those phones are worth it, though.
Yeah, I like them.
Yeah, they make good phones.
I like them. I want one with the 512 gigabytes. So you have plenty
storage.
Power.
Right.
And it's not really that much storage.
Up a lot of space. Huh?
Yeah, it's not necessary the storage for me. I know some people like to take pictures, but they it comes
well,
in
well, yeah, you know, apps take up a lot of space, though.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, like I say, Samsung, they put out a good product.
But I use browsers that take ads and take the dollar amount that those ads pay for watching them, and it can pay as much as $40 a month or more.
Okay.
And it also saves on the time. I saved over 16 megabytes and 300 just this month, 392 trackers.
Okay. So what do you got planned for the, if anything, new tonight?
Oh, I don't go
or
out.
Tomorrow.
I don't go out too many stray bullets flying around. I had friends.
I stay off the road. Yeah, I stay off the road.
Around here, they'd be shooting fireworks. It's parish they allow. Some of them they don't. But, you know, up north, up there in St. Louis and that, they be firing gunshots.
No,
bullets come down, hit people in the head. Near the airport, you've had airplanes that had bullets in the frames in the top of them.
Man.
Causing a lot of damage.
So
anyway,
That's what they're doing in St. Louis?
Cities.
Well, they do it everywhere, actually.
Well, they don't do it around here. I don't hear no gunshots on New Year's Eve.
What time are you in Louisiana?
I'm outside north. I'm outside of Baton Rouge.
Okay.
Down in New Orleans. Down in New Orleans, they're killing people left and right. They do
only
some
been
areas
to two,
in Baton Rouge, too.
I've only been to two parts of... I've been to three parts of Louisiana. New Orleans, where my grandparents, we still got those houses. Houma, Louisiana. And when I was on a bus trip on my way to Mesquite, Texas, or Dallas, Texas, we had a stop off at Grambling University.
What, were you on a college tour?
No, I took a bus for Memorial Day weekend from Florida to Dallas, Texas. I really should have flown. But son said, get on a bus. And one of the stops was Grambling University. Was this, you know, you were on campus, on the edge of it. And I had a cousin that attended Grambling. But I will not make that trip again, not in the bus.
What's wrong with you? You can get off and take a leak whenever you got ready, couldn't you?
Well, on a bus you got a bathroom, but the thing with bus bathrooms, some people have accidents in those things. So.
Oh.
I'd rather fly back. Every airplane I've been on that I went to the restroom during flight, they always left it clean. And then on Amtrak, overall, those bathrooms are clean. Overall.
Yeah. I thought it was the size of the size of the airline bathrooms.
Well, man, those bathrooms on the airline, they're small.
Yeah, if you're sitting on the stool and they're up around 30,000 feet, you might get flushed outside.
I remember my mother told me when I was young, she said, don't use the bathroom on a plane. She said one time somebody opened up the wrong door and, you know, got sucked up. So for years, I never used a bathroom on a plane until really maybe the last 10 years or so. And you're not gonna walk out the wrong door on a plane like that.
Where's Robin at today?
And the bathroom is where it is.
Where's your cohort? Can't wish her a happy new year.
We touched bases this morning. She was running It's My House on about one or two of her other channels. Because I got started about 6 minutes late with this live stream. So she's around.
Yeah.
In any event, Bianchi, happy
I'll
new
let
year.
You. Yeah, you too. I'll talk to you next year. See you later.
Okay. Talk to you then.